Where do fantasy and reality meet in the samurai?
It sort of happens pretty early on. I can't put my finger on it. It's like, it's almost like for example, the beginning part of the film, until he gets the call that he finally answers and goes to deliver the package. It used to be a bit longer in the script, and also we shot a bit more, and we sort of used to sort of tighten it up a bit. Because to us it was like we have this policeman in his everyday experience, and we sort of get a sense of who he is, and we have all these almost like sort of radiation, some sort of weird science going on that he's unable to read, that something might be trying to get through to him. Like he would find, for example, something we cut out, that when he's tracing back those wolf tracks at this one piece of property where he would actually also find human footprint there and stuff like that. So that all these signs of, so this sort of foreboding, which we eventually sort of decided to sort of cut short. So it was actually a question also in editing the film, at which point exactly to have it skip over into more of a like fantastic. And I think our decision was to do that pretty early on and to rather have the characterization of him be part of the fantasy part, be part of the actual chase, be part of that. So I think it happens when he receives the package, the parcel. Where does it come from? There's actually no, I mean, especially when you meet that guy who then receives it, it's like, you don't think he Googled? He, you know, it's not something like he ordered this thing on Amazon or something. It just out of this, it comes from this strange place where, like, the Hitcher in the film by Robert Hammond comes from, because he can't actually be real, because he must have been on killing spree for like weeks, or and he killed so many people. Right now, a national investigation must be going on, but it isn't. He just sort of appears as if out of the haze, out of the phantasm, enters this plane of reality. And I think it's like this with the samurai, coming in from the edges of perception and sort of entering our world. But our world changes, of course, then, and becomes this sort of heightened fairy tale-ish fantasy world.
Okay, so in terms of the non-Jacob samurai, yeah, obviously he's wearing a dress, which would generally imply gender identity, yes, issues rather than sexuality. Why did you choose to put him in a dress?
It's not like a very conscious choice, because the image of the samurai came pretty much fully formed to me. It was like a lucid daydream or something. It's like, okay, that's how that weird, that's this guy, how he looks, and he's there. And so of course then when you start to build the story, and you sort of start to ask yourself, well, okay, well, it's pretty obvious that it is, has something to do with like sexual identity or gender identity. And I think trying to find a personal answer to that, why, like it's a bit like analyzing a dream, so you never can be quite sure if it's like the proper answer. But there must be a reason why I come up with this. Is being gay myself, having had like in I think Jakob pretty much represents me in my like late teens, early twenties, sort of like having sort of hang-ups about my whole identity and everything. And I think at that time I was sort of drawn to cross-dressers, to transvestites, to this whole side of this whole subculture, because I felt like they are taking liberties, they are pushing the boundaries and sort of transgressing the social norms in a way that is very, very liberating, and they can say things and get away with things that I would never feel. But at the same time there was this sort of fear as well, because me being so square and so balled up, I felt like, okay, but is this who I will have to be? Is this who I will, you know, who I will become? So there's also this sort of fear. And I think the samurai pretty much for Jakob represents this sort of weird, contradictive dilemma. And so I hope, you know, but the thing is, the film also was at a couple of gay lesbian festivals. And mm-hmm. Generally it got a good reception, but there has been one particular incident where a film was deemed transphobic.
I wondered that.
Yeah, and I never, it never occurred to me, but in a strange way, also now telling what I just told you, it's, well, you could see it that way. I hope it's not, and I hope, because to me, the samurai, even if he's like the villain, like officially he's the villain of the piece, but to me he's much more an agent of like liberation, even if it comes through destruction and violence. So I think he's a very positive figure, or a very sort of empowering figure, so I hope it's not, but again, you never know yourself well enough to actually, I think other people will need to answer that if they feel offended by that, or I hope they don't. Because
I agree that, I mean, things that offend people that's supposed to be politically incorrect, it's not about political correctness, it's about understanding how our emotions work.
Yes,
that's why it's so powerful, people. Seriously, it's amazing.
Yes, that's what I think.
It's very interesting in that sense, because, I mean, people in the Q&A brought up the idea of Buffalo Bill, whereas I aligned it far more to something like Paris is Burning. Have you ever seen that one?
I haven't.
I think you'd like it. It's a very, okay. It starts off one section with a very, very similar sequence. It's very reminiscent of that, and it keys very nicely into that kind of queer cinema aesthetic.
Okay, so. No, I need to see Paris is Burning. Perfect. Yeah, well, with Buffalo Bill, but Buffalo Bill, he's sort of much more, he's a much more normal villain, or he's much more clearly the villain, or the, like a monster of the piece. But again, there's still some connection, because also Buffalo Bill, he has this sort of, he's a sort of caterpillar becoming a butterfly. In a way, you could say that the samurai is some sort of butterfly shadow self of Jacob, you know? Like, I mean, or at least some sort of very exaggerated, like distorted version of the kind of butterfly that lives within him. So there is a connection.
I mean, I personally saw the samurai figure. This is who Jacob wants to be. But in order to get there, it's almost got, like, to really overshoot in order to come back. So yeah. it worked really well like that. How did you design the samurai's actual aesthetic? You were talking about, for example, in the Q&A, actually having the dress made properly. Why do it like that?
Well, it's those are very practical. Those are then, at this point, become very practical questions that you ask yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, you want, okay, now that you know he should have a dress, it's about, okay, which color should the dress be? This is like, and so it becomes very practical, like, okay, what scenes do we have? We have Jacob following around with a flashlight in the forest. So a black dress wouldn't make much sense, because what we want is we want it to have this sort of animal in your headlights quality. Like, if you want to catch him, it's as if he's almost like, it's too much. It's as if the highlights are all of a sudden, like, you know, it gets too bright all of a sudden. And so he needed to have a white dress. So we knew that. Then you would have find the right fabric in order to have that effect. And then it's about how the dress is cut. And we were thinking about, okay, should it really look like just something he found and put on? And because that's, in a way, what the film tells us it is. But then if we just put, like, normal women's dresses on him, we would find out that the waistline is often very up very high, which didn't really suit his very lean male figure. So we just lowered the waistline lower until it became sexy for him to wear, even though it's not a woman's dress anymore. If a woman would wear it, it wouldn't work for mm-hmm. female physique. And so a lot of these things mm-hmm. that happened during the design process, which is actually also a very, very fun process. It's like, just right.
Absolutely. I'm intrigued about how you say that he's intended to be sexy, because obviously in his face he's obviously very, very male, and there's a lot of focus with the lights on his muscles, really gorgeous muscles.
But I find that sexy. It's really, I also find this sort of, this weird, because people, it's interesting, because we had the Eurovision Song Contest, I know you're aware that the Conchita Wurst, she won, and of course it's a guy cross-dressing, and he is still having his beard on, and he is a very beautiful woman at the same time, and people are very, very weirded out by this like unexpected or to them contradictory, whereas I find that very, in a kinky way, very, 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 very sexy and very, very alluring. So I wanted him to have that as well. He should remain this very virile and very, you know, especially as opposed to Jacob, this very, very, like, wide-eyed and innocent-looking guy, this very virile and tough and male physique, but in that dress, and still also very lean and sexy in that dress. So it's, I just like these sorts of gender-bending contradictions. I find them attractive.
I was wondering, in terms of what you thought about aligning the story with not only the horror genre, in other words, monsters, big, bad, nasty, but also there's a hint at a kind of sadomasochistic dialogue in there. Do you think it's kind of, in some ways, still appropriate to be using the kind of big, bad, nasty stuff, or is it something that you think we still very much need to explore, because people aren't happy with homosexuality still?
I have to admit that these are thoughts that come in afterwards. Like, also my sort of my responsibility, like also my responsibility as a filmmaker towards, like, representation, and I don't really think about that. I have to say, it's a bit more like, other people, other filmmakers have said that as well, so I borrow it from them. But I, very, very fitting, like, I'm more like a pornographer, almost, you know, like, I just try to find things that speak to me and that sort of turn me on, and also sort of, you know what I mean. So, or with music, like, you can't tell why you. With pop music or something, you can't tell why some music makes you dance and some music doesn't, if people actually are would still need to see something like that. Although I'm very happy if the film has that effect, like people, I don't want to rub anything in their faces. It's not like I want to, or I don't want to. I don't even think a film can, for example, have a sexual identity. I don't think a film can be gay. It's like, you know, there's some sort of homoeroticism going on in the film, which is obviously what fuels it from also one of the things that fuels it from coming from me. But I hope that also, like, a straight audience can pretty much take something from it, and can, so, because these sort of aspects of not sort of being quite, of not quite being in the right place, or not quite, or sort of repressing certain aspects of your personality that you might want to explore at some point, unless you become very unhealthy. These sorts of themes, I think, are general.
Mm.
And also these themes of, like, sort of also having and being in an environment that restricts the ways you can sort of explore these kind of things. So I hope it's a film for... I hope it's not just a gay,
oh,
gay film.
How would you like the audience to react at the sequences where we see the other villagers killed horribly?
this is one of the reasons why the film didn't get money from German public television, because it's not about... Because it could be much more gruesome. It's not very gruesome the way they are killed. There is a bit of blood and stuff, but it's more like grotesque or even a bit funny. But I think that's the problem, because it was very important to us that you need to be willing to follow the samurai, you know? You need to be willing to follow his crusade to the bitter end, to still be sort of intrigued. And so I think, again, it's maybe a bit irresponsible, even, you know, if you see it as a realistic film, to do that, to give you even a sense of glee or a sense of, oh, finally, some sort of sense of almost like as if all this tension that has been mounting up, finally finding some sort of release, even with all the blood coming out, like, you know, literally like you had a bottle of champagne and you've been shaking it for so long, and now finally the cork comes off, and, you know, you should more have this kind of sense of glee and this sense of relief and this sense of, you know, so, and again, this might be a bit irresponsible, but well, anyway.
Screw irresponsible, it's marvelous.
yeah, at least for the course of the film, because it's all about this, it's all about Jakob trying to keep things under control. And also, because he's stating all the time, "I got it under control." Even at a point where everything is sort of it's sort of ridiculous to even claim that anymore. But I just love it.
How did you actually plan the way the music was going to work within it? What kind of moods were you trying to convey? Not only with the kind of wonderful gay disco music, as I saw it, but with the other stuff, more classical pieces.
It should have this sort of, I think we consider it, apart from some scenes where the music has more of a, like, needs to do something specifically, like thicken the mood, but I think for, like, the main theme that you also hear for a couple of times, it was to see the whole film almost as if it's a film about a romantic sort of movement, like two people's romantically being drawn to each other, and have a music that sort of has this quality to it, you know, like a not exactly maybe a love theme, but a seduction theme or something. And that's, I mean, the samurai, quite early on when he meets this guy for the first time, he says we could go dancing, you know, because there's a party going on that is referred to before, and also by the use of it. So in some sort of alternate universe, that the film could go from there, you know, like, oh, well, okay, yeah, sure, I didn't have any other plans, you know, and then he could go to the party with that guy, and who knows what would have happened. It doesn't happen in the film, but I think the music, or part of the music, is still sort of from that film, and I like that. I like the way how it adds this sort of layer to it as well, yeah.
It's very, very sweet.
Yeah.
Obviously, you say that you had difficulties with the financing and so forth in Germany. If you had a situation where you had the public completely behind you, obviously you had to get a Kickstarter campaign and stuff like that going on. If you had ideal circumstances, would you change anything?
I think there is this... The strange thing happens because when you work so long on something... It's like with a kid, you don't really ask yourself, oh, wouldn't it be nice if she or he would have turned out a bit better or something, you know, under different circumstances. I think you sort of start to laugh, warts and all, you know, and I think it's sort of like that. I lost my critical distance in a way, so the film makes me quite happy most of the times when I see it with an audience or something. So I think you could imagine that the effects work, for example, could be a bit more like. It has a sort of gleeful, funny, but sort of inconvincing quality to it. I don't know if we would have... I guess we would have done it differently if we would have had a larger budget, but I don't know if it would necessarily have been better for that. So, you know, next film will always be different, a different thing, but for now, for this...
What have you got coming up next, can you say?
It's still still kind of boring because it's very early in development. I'm working on a television series right now because I'm developing something that is very low budget again. But so, although I had a not so good experience with television, I'm still trying. It's an idea I had for a long time, even in film school, but in film school you don't think that you can develop a... So now I got a scholarship, like a residency. I'm going to Paris, actually, to write it, which is nice. And so I'm writing pilot, and hopefully we'll get it my next year. And it's also a sort of horror thing. It's about a... In East Germany, I mean, you have that everywhere, but in East Germany, very specifically, you have these sort of... socialist architecture of housing complexes at the edges of the city that have been built to sort of house all the workers that would, and these have I lived in one of those when I was a kid, and these have become very, very old and very, very decrepit, do you say that, very, very soon. And it's about one of those houses nowadays and its inhabitants, and about one inhabitant that unbeknownst to the others, almost like a puppeteer, sort of controls each and all of their movements. And so it starts out as kind of social realist, but becomes more and more like a Lovecraftian sort of piece of weird fiction. I hope it will get made, but I can't tell for sure right now. And I have another thing. You can see Lovecraft is some sort of obsession of mine. I have another thing. I already have a first draft of an adaptation of The Color Out of Space by Lovecraft, but it's a like modern day, very loose adaptation. But that I feel would need a lot of budget in terms of what kinds of budgets I can afford. It's not like, I mean, it would be maybe 1 million or 2 million, because it's about a, again, it's about a comet that comes down, and or a meteorite, and over the next couple months or so, nature around in that area where it came down starts to subtly change. And I would really love to have this sort of like practical sort of plant life that sort of has these weird little sort of shapes and everything. And I think to build this and to actually pull that off, that would be kind of expensive. So I'll wait. I think I'll wait for a couple more years to actually try and get that done. Yeah.
I'm interested about what you just said about puppeteering. That's fascinating.
Yes.
In terms of the samurai, how much responsibility do you think that Jacob bears for being so utterly repressed, and how much do you feel the village is bad?
Good question. Because I think is it an indictment of like this small town, small-mindedness? And I think, in a way, Jacob has this small mind is so internalized as well. So the homophobia, or whatever, what you might call it, is so much his own as well. I mean, of course, it's not his fault, but still, it's like, I don't think that... It's not very nice the way everybody treats him, but I think like they could be challenged if he would dare. I mean, and they are challenged, but in a very like terminal way in within the film. So I think a lot of it comes from himself as well. So he is sort of an anti-hero, but I feel very much sympathy with him, because again, he's very much a representation of myself. So yeah, so I think he is responsible as well. But it's just a meditation on these kinds of things, how much we even have these sorts of shackles or these sorts of confines internalized and don't allow ourselves to actually go somewhere else, or to, you know, if this place has become too small for us, quite literally, like with the miniature town, you know, it's real people can't live here, but he doesn't go, so in a way he sort of had it coming. But I really sympathize, and I'm very happy for him in the end that he, I think, has sort of... Michel, the main actor, he found a very nice way to describe the end. It's like his soul has finally come back to his body, and now when he has a sword and sort of does this, he's sort of trying out, you know, this new personality that now is sort of, for the first time, sort of whole, even though, of course, he has left society completely behind it, but never mind.
It's fascinating in that sense, because obviously his look is so almost like ideal Hollywood kind of hero type. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the blondness, you've got, you know, very short hair and all this kind of thing, and it's kind of subverting that and saying you can be who you want to be regardless of what you look like.
Exactly.
And it's marvellous.
Thank you.
I shall leave it there. Thank you so much, and good luck.
Yes, thank you. It was a pleasure.